Clarion Call, Part 4. Janice sighed and relaxed her grip on the barista.
I guess we're not supposed to know what that was all about, she remarked.
X shrugged, then pivoted smoothly on the ball of one foot and put a hand down on a passing Valkyrie's shoulder. Or he would have, if she hadn't sensed the gesture coming, slipped aside, slapped his hand smartly away, and faced off with him in a martial arts ready stance, poised and ready. On the face of it, the confrontation should have seemed a little silly to an outside observer, like, say, Janice, in large part because the Valkyrie in question was no more than 3 feet tall, and proportioned accordingly, with tiny fists no bigger than billiard balls. Without a scale reference, she'd have looked like a perfectly normal, if rather petite, woman, but viewed against Cage's 6 feet of solid muscle, the disparity was stark and a bit ridiculous. At a glance, it looked like X was being challenged by a 4-year-old. A closer look, though, dispelled the illusion immediately. Aaron Stonefist, the Valkyrie close combat specialist, was hardly a 4-year-old. She was a native of Vanaheim's Northern Shire, and the look in her cool blue eyes as she fixed them on X's was anything but childlike. Having made her point, Aaron relaxed slightly and said, "Sorry, Cage, but you ought to watch where you throw those hands. You'll find that few Vitir appreciate being manhandled by the big folk." X grinned and held up his hands in surrender. "Sorry," he said. "I'm just looking for a little information." Aaron relaxed fully, raked her thick black hair back from her forehead, and said, "What do you want to know?" "That guy over there in the suit," said X, gesturing with his head. "Who is he?" Aaron turned, then blinked, and regarded X with surprise.
Well, no, I guess you couldn't be expected to know," she said, shaking her head.
"That, my dear sir, is Tyr Grimjaws, the leavings of the wolf Fenris, the Aesir's great champion, Asgard's god of war." She watched for a moment to see if he wanted anything else, then concluded from the rather blank look on his face that he didn't, and continued on her way.
"Fuck," X said.
Janice just stood there looking uneasy.
"I'm entirely at a loss," she finally said. "Someone should probably get Chad a drink, though."
When the door of her borrowed diplomat's quarters opened at 10:15, Utina had finished her simulation run and was sitting on the couch, not really watching the news. She looked up and smiled as her half of the wedding party entered, reflecting as she did that wedding party was really the wrong term for the group of people tasked with attending and assisting the bride and groom in this particular deal. Wedding Special Mission Force might be closer to the mark if you wanted to use the IPO Tactical Division term for such things. Oh, they didn't look all that formidable right now, but then they weren't arrayed for battle yet. An uninformed observer might take them for a simple clutch of college girls, but Utina knew much better. If it came to it, she'd be just as confident going into a fight with these 4 women at her back as she would with an entire army. Maybe more so.
"Morning, Utina," said Caitlin Hutchins cheerfully. "Are you ready?"
Utina stood up, hugged her best friend, and said with equal cheer, "I sincerely doubt it, but let's go." The 5, Utina, Caitlin, Wakaba Shinohara, Vigdis, and Ardorothy Wainwright, walked from the visiting diplomatic quarters to the back corner of the garden. They followed a route, mapped out for them by the station's executive officer, Susan Ivanova, through station service corridors to a special accessway so that they wouldn't be seen by any of the people beginning to gather in the adjoining area where the ceremony was actually to be held. They started out chattering among themselves as friends do, but as they drew closer to their destination, they became slowly quieter. By the time they emerged from the access passage, they were all but silent, filled with anticipation and wrapped in a kind of reverent hush. A sense of occasion had settled upon them all, the first true realization with heart as well as head of what they were all there to play a part in. The passageway gave onto a warm, fragrant room, paneled in cedar and dominated by a large circular tub of steaming water, on the surface of which, naturally, had been scattered handsful of white rose petals. Waiting for them there, smiling beatifically, was Beldandy. No, Utina corrected herself. In those elaborate blue and white robes, with her hair down and her gold and silver accoutrements shining, this was Vertandi Wishbringer, not just Corlin's lovable Aunt Beldandy, greeting them.
welcome, she said. Under anything resembling normal circumstances, Utena Tenja would have felt at best rather silly, and at worst extremely weird, as five women, even these five, maybe especially these five, divested her ceremoniously of her everyday clothes, bathed her, and then dressed her in entirely unfamiliar garb. It was not the sort of thing she would customarily submit herself to say the least. Somehow, though, maybe because of her conversation with Vigdis the day before, maybe because of Vertandi's soothing presence, maybe some of both, it all felt right. It was a most uncommon experience, but then this was a most uncommon day. Cleansed and clad in her brand new finery, she sat César on an immaculate woven mat while Vertandi slowly, methodically, but sparingly applied makeup, another thing she almost never bothered with, to her face. Once that job was done, and with even greater ceremony than had gone before, the Norn of today unwrapped a black velvet parcel, and fitted the item it had protected carefully upon it in his head. Then she raised her charge to her feet and said, "Your preparations are complete. Are you ready?" Utena smiled and answered truthfully, "No." Then she added wryly, "Ironically, I've spent my entire life being quite deliberately not ready for this moment." Vertandi chuckled indulgently. "I thought as much. Well, then, this should fit in with all the other defining moments of your life in one respect. The hour has come whether you're ready or not." "She's right, you know," said Wakaba. "Don't have a clue what you're doing, grit your teeth and pull through anyway, and end up looking like you had a plan from the start." Caitlin nodded agreement. "It's very you." Utena rolled her eyes. "Thank you, ladies." Then, turning back to Vertandi with a faintly troubled expression, she said, "I know what to do. I just don't know if I'm the right person to be doing it." Vertandi took her hands, gave her one of the most loving smiles she'd ever received, and said, "You know, a few years ago I helped at the wedding of another young woman who, at the 11th hour, wondered that same thing. I'll tell you the same thing I told her. I know the truth of a lover's heart. If I didn't think this was right, I wouldn't be helping." Utena considered the Norn's words gravely for a few seconds, then grinned, looking much more her usual self. "That was just what I needed to hear," she said. Vertandi beamed. "It's a gift," she said modestly. Utena laughed. "Let's do this thing." At about the same time Caitlin and her detachment reached the diplomatic quarters, another group of wedding commandos arrived at another stateroom on another level of the station to find an entirely different set of circumstances waiting for them. Nall Silverclaw, in his human form, Thor Ironhammer, Lyneth Winternight, and Gudrun Trumace didn't actually reach Corwin's assigned room in the VOQ. Instead, their attention caught by the raucous rock music blaring from the open door of the next room over, they glanced inside and spotted him in there. Far from being tense and impatient, as Nall had inspected, Corwin seemed completely happy. Down on one knee, wrench in hand, bolting down the front panel of a small, cube-shaped robot, while another, much more sophisticated, repulsor-lifted model watched over his shoulder and bobbed gently with the beat. He was so relaxed, in fact, that he was even singing along with the blasting music. "You can find the perpetual motion. Fix your mind on a crystal day. Always down for good conversation. There's an ear for what you say." "Corwin?" Nall blurted, staring at the scene without fully comprehending it. Corwin looked up. "Oh, hey, Nall," he yelled over the guitar solo. Then, reaching to the small robot's front panel, he turned down the music a little. "Is it that time already? I'm just finishing up here." So saying, he closed up the cube-shaped robot's front panel, gave the speaker set into that panel a quick going-over with some canned air, then gave the robot a friendly thump. "There. How's that?" The robot's fork-like, three-fingered manipulators weren't well-suited to giving the thumbs up, but he tried anyway. "Good deal," said Corwin. Straightening up, he brushed at his knees and added, "Good as new, and just in time." With a gleeful expression, he shared a high five first with the square robot, then with the hovering white one.
What the hell are you doing?
Nall sputtered. Making new friends, said Corwin with a smile. Guys, this is my buddy Nall. He's going to be best man at my wedding today.
Eve, said the white robot, bobbing in the air in a sort of anti-gravity curtsy.
The other robot rolled over on well-polished tracks and extended a scrupulously clean manipulator.
Wally,
he burbled, shaking Nall's rather slack hand.
Hi, said Nall distractedly. Nice to meet you. Would you excuse me for a second?
Then, edging past them to advance on Corwin as he washed his hands at the kitchenette sink, he hissed,
You are supposed to be ready.
Corwin shrugged. Yeah, ready to get ready. He finished washing his hands, dried them on a dish towel, then presented himself, hands open at his sides, and added, Which I am. Nall stood and stared at him, hands working ineffectually at his sides. Corwin looked, well, about as Nall would expect him to look after pulling an all-nighter overhauling some ancient robot. Rumpled, grease-stained, and generally besmirched. The mere mortal hand soap provided in the VOQ kitchenette hadn't even dented the grunge under his fingernails.
You idiot! Nall burst out. The bath is just part of the procedure. It's supposed to be symbolic. There's no provision for you actually being all greasy and shit.
Lyneth laughed and clapped the distraught dragon on the shoulder.
Relax, Nall. You don't think we have a protocol for this kind of thing in place by now? That's why I was chosen to be one of his attendants. If I could make him presentable for the Vanaheim Hunt Ball half an hour after we finished overhauling a jet engine, and I did, I can handle this.
Corwin surveyed the chaos of tools, parts, and scrap materials scattered around the floor and tables in the stateroom, then sighed and said, Guess we'll have to clean this up later. Come on, you guys.
Nall blinked. You're bringing the robots along?
He asked, sotto voce.
Sure, Corwin replied, unconcerned. Didn't I just say? They're my friends.
The group, now seven strong, took a circuitous path designed to keep them away from the meadow and also negate any possible chance of their running into the other team. Presently they emerged from another similar access tunnel into another similar cedar-paneled room, though in this one Vertandi was not waiting, since even she could not be in two places at once. The proceedings that followed weren't as ceremonious at first as their counterparts in the other bathhouse. For instance, the groom wasn't expected to just sit there and let his attendants do the washing. That would just have been weird. What ensued instead was more like a regular trip to the Valhalla Banya after a hard day's Valkyrieing, and since he'd grown up having such days all his life, Corwin didn't find anything awkward in the fact that two of his attendants were women.
I wonder if it's a bad omen if we can't actually get heat sink paste out of his hair, Gudrun wondered.
How did you get it in your hair? Nall demanded.
Obviously, you've never overhauled a robot, said Lyneth.
Hold still, Corwin.
Ow! That's attached, you know.
Laugh it up, God boy. If we can't get this out, we'll have to shave it, and you'll be married with the Nine World's worst comb-over.
Thus it went, at least until the cleaning was done, thermal paste removed successfully, and the time came to get dressed.
That was a much more involved and elaborate process than usual, as the two Valkyrie assembled upon their comrade a set of raiments much more complex than even the ornate dress uniforms they themselves had donned. At the very end, Eve got in on the act as well, using her hover capability to help him on with his coat so that Lyneth could fasten it.
Perfect, Lynette remarked.
Very nice, Nall agreed.
Ooh,
Wally and Eve concurred.
Outstanding, said Thor. I haven't seen its like since, well, since Baldur's return from hell, I think.
Corwin laughed.
You're one for the photo album yourself, Uncle, he said. I can count the times I've seen you in something other than jeans and a t-shirt on one hand.
Aye, Thor replied, grunting as he wrestled his way to his ceremonial armor's breastplate. And now I can't quite remember how this all goes together.
Here, let me help, Gudrun tutted. Hold still.
While the Thunder God and the Valkyrie struggled with that, the side door opened and the tall, grizzled figure of Odin Winterbeard, even more imposing than usual in his finest of Aesir finery, entered. The All-Father's face brightened at the sight of his grandson fully bedecked, and he turned a blind eye, figuratively speaking, to Thor's battle with his armor as he spoke.
"You look well, Corwin," he said. Corwin half bowed.
"Thank you, Grandfather." Stepping closer, Odin smiled and put his hand on Corwin's shoulder.
"Are you ready?" he asked.
Corwin grinned.
"Nope," he replied happily.
While all that was going on, Mitsuru Suwabuki stood in a small knot of duelists from the Sephiro and Gerardo chapters at the edge of the meadow, chatting with his DSM counterpart, Boba Fett, and generally feeling good about the occasion. The last of the guests, the contingent from Asgard, including the Aesir Council themselves, were arriving now. The snacking and seating were going smoothly. T-minus, he checked his watch, 27 minutes and counting, and everything still looked good. By his side, the Tenjo Academy Order of the Rose's recently arrived guest, Anaximandra Drax, stood shaded under a parasol and took in the scene with wide blue eyes that contrasted starkly with her ink-black skin. Though not actually a duelist, the Svartelvan refugee was recently enough arrived that Suwabuki had been reluctant to leave her behind at the academy while he and his colleagues attended the wedding, and the word from both Corwin and Utina when asked was, "Sure, bring her along." So he had.
"This is amazing," she murmured. "So many people from so many different worlds."
Pointing across the meadow, she added,
"Look, even Svartalfheim has sent an ambassador."
Suwabuki blinked.
"What?"
"No, the Svartalfheim government specifically declined their His voice trailed off as his eyes followed Anaximandra's pointing finger and saw the individual she was pointing to. A dark-skinned, thin-faced man in red-trimmed black, adorned with a diplomatic sash and medals. He had silver hair swept back in a ponytail, and on his arm was a tall blonde woman in silver and white Asgardian robes. The pair of them stood just outside the door leading onto the meadow from the building that was really the main access point to Blue Sector, surveying the scene. For a moment, Mitsuru Tsuwabuki's mind simply could not grasp what he was looking at. Once it did, it took him a few further seconds to find his momentarily misplaced ability to speak. And when he did, what came out, in a low, dread-filled murmur, was,
"Shit."
Boba Fett, who had missed the byplay with Anaximandra, turned and arched an eyebrow at Suwabuki.
"What?"
"Over there," said Suwabuki, gesturing with his chin. Fett looked, blinked, and said in a disbelieving tone,
"No."
Suwabuki nodded glumly.
"Yup."
"Shit," Boba growled.
Then, instantly businesslike, he raised his hand and tabbed the comlink on the back of it to life.
"Fett to Shinguji," he snapped.
"Go ahead, Boba," a slightly puzzled young woman's voice replied. "Mimi, we have a problem. Akio Itori is here." A silent beat. Then,
"Say again?"
At almost the same moment, Master Chief Petty Officer Sir John Spartan, RSN, KDSC, etc., was scanning the other side of the crowd with gimlet eyes. He wasn't honestly expecting trouble, but old habits die hard, and in a big open space like this, his instincts told him to be wary. Not of any specific thing, but wary all the same. An instant later, Cortana's voice spoke directly into his oral nerves, as well as Janice's, X's, and Chad's. John, who knew Cortana as well as, if not better than, he knew himself, recognized her tone of voice instantly as the one that usually heralded some kind of crisis. "Heads up, Team Spartan," she said. "I just got the final rev of the guest list, and there's probably going to be trouble." Across the meadow, Boba Fett had pulled up a copy of the same list on a wrist-mounted holodisplay and was scowling at it. "It looks like he was invited by Lady Freya of Vanaheim," he said, both to the duelists gathered around him and to Mimi Shinguji via his still-open comlink.
"Oh, for... what do we do?" Mimi asked. "I need you to notify your mother and the others from Ishiyama," Boba told her.
Tsuwabuki turned to two of his duelists.
"Card, you're on the rest of our group. Keiko, you take Bathhouse G.
Juniper, Bathhouse B. Lindsay, I need you to warn the new Avalon contingent," Boba continued. "Sakura, inform Lieutenant Corwin. I'll see if I can get to the chief.
And let's get this done as quietly as possible, people. He wants to cause a panic. Let's not oblige him.
Bruce Corwin ran full tilt down the long corridor linking Turboshaft A to the station commander's conference room, which happened to be in the top floor of that same false building leading from Blue Sector into the garden, burst through the door, and breathlessly announced, "There's a problem." At the conference table, Ivanova, Captain Derek Bacon, and Security Chief Michael Garibaldi turned to face him with looks of mild surprise, though it quickly became clear that it was surprise at his entrance, not at his message. "We know," Ivanova said. "Sit down."